And so it was no surprise that the very next day, on December 4th, 1953, Oppenheimer's old Los Alamos friend and colleague, Admiral William Deke Parsons, learned of Eisenhower's blank wall directive. Parsons knew all about Oppie's left-wing associations and thought them meaningless. Earlier that autumn, Parsons had written a Dear Oppie letter in which he observed, "The anti-intellectualism of recent months may have passed its peak." Now he knew otherwise. That afternoon he met his wife, Martha, at a cocktail party, and she could see that he was extremely upset. After telling her the news, he said, "I have to put a stop to it. Ike has to know what's really going on." At home that evening he told her, "This is the biggest mistake the United States could make." When he said he had decided to get an appointment with the Secretary of the Navy the next morning, Martha said, "Deke, you're an admiral. Why can't you go to the president?" "No," he told his wife. "The Secretary of the Navy is my boss. I can't go around him." That night, Admiral Parsons experienced chest pains. The next morning, he looked so pale that Martha drove him to Bethesda Naval Hospital. He died that day of a heart attack, which Martha always believed was brought on by the news about Oppie. Also on December 4th, President Eisenhower left for a 5-day trip to Bermuda, and Strauss went with him. When they returned 5 days later, Strauss began to choreograph the next steps in the government's case against Oppenheimer. He actually prepared several scripts of what he should say to Oppenheimer, who was scheduled to be back from Europe and in Princeton on December 13th. On the following afternoon, Oppenheimer phoned and the two men exchanged mundane pleasantries. Strauss casually said that it might be a good idea if Oppenheimer came down to see him in 2 days. Oppenheimer agreed, but said he had nothing much to report. "Don't expect anything much." As it turned out, the FBI had not completed its analysis of Borden's letter. Initially, Hoover had not taken it seriously. Borden's charges, an agent noted soon after the letter arrived, are distorted and restated in his own words in order to make them appear more forceful than the true facts indicate. So the Bureau was now in a catch-up mode and asked Strauss to postpone his presentation of charges to Oppenheimer. Strauss wired Oppenheimer and rescheduled their meeting for Monday, December 21st. On December 18th, Strauss went to the Oval Office to discuss how he planned to handle the Oppenheimer case. Present were Vice President Richard Nixon, William Rogers, White House aides C.D. Jackson and Robert Cutler, and the CIA chief, Alan Dulles. Eisenhower was out of the room, meeting with congressional leaders. Rogers briefly suggested they should simply do what Truman had done to Harry Dexter White, call Oppenheimer before an open congressional committee and grill him about the derogatory information in his security file. White, however, had dropped dead of a heart attack after the ordeal, and now Jackson and everyone else jumped all over the idea. At that, Rogers smilingly withdrew the suggestion. Instead, they gravitated toward Strauss' notion of appointing a panel to conduct an administrative review of Oppenheimer's security clearance. It would not be a trial in the formal sense. The scientist would be offered a choice. He could quietly leave, or he could appeal the suspension of his security clearance before a panel to be appointed by Strauss.